Hey guys, how's things? I'm Scott, it's my show, Scott Horton Show. Hope you had a good weekend. What the? Yeah. Alright, well, today's show will be me complaining about stuff, because I guess I got no guests for you. If you're one of them, I really only like the interviews types, then see you tomorrow. For those of you who like hearing me complain about stuff, well, boy, do I have a show for you. All right. Hang on a minute. You sit right there. I got to paste a couple of things. Oh, whoops. I forgot. I need to log in there. Yeah, I'm posting up on liberty.me. Liberty.me. It's like Facebook, only just for libertarians. And it's really great. Liberty.me. By the way, I'm way behind on doing Eye on the Empire with Jeffrey Tucker. That's on my list of stuff I gotta do today after the show. Call Jeff Tucker and say, hey, Jeff Tucker, let's do a show. So that'll be soon. Liberty.me. Okay, and then Twitter. One last one, man. Hey, all you Twitter folk. Show's on. Hey, all you show folk, hang out in the chat room during the show. It's hashtag Scott Horton Show. Follow me on Twitter during the show, or whenever. At Scott Horton Show. Same difference, pretty much. It's a free chat room. Is a IRC free no chat room. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. Or just go to scotthorton.org/chat. scotthorton.org/chat. Fitzy G and the boys are in there. Morning, everybody. Hope you guys are doing good. Get a little chat room group going on today if you guys want. Cool. All right. So, business. Lots of business here. First of all, thanks to Tom Woods for having me on his show. Every time I go on Tom Woods' show, I get new listeners. I know this because people say to me, I first heard you on the Tom Woods show. So, cool. Thanks, Tom, for having me on and for directing your loyal listeners this way. And hi, everybody, to the new listeners who came here from by way of the Tom Woods Show. Oh, good to have you. Rumor has it me and Tom are going to write a book someday. So hang tight for that. Or just listen to the show and you'll know exactly what's going to be in the book. Because that's what's going to be in the book. All right. But so anyway, it's libertarian foreign policy mostly. I also talk about how much I hate cops and all other government employees. I'm good on central banking. Don't cover it as much as I used to just because, I don't know. But probably I should more. But I'm definitely a hard money guy and a market anarchist type. You'll like it. Or not. And then also I want to say thank you again to everybody who participated in the raffle to try to win the trip to Costa Rica. John Cornish won it. And in case you missed it, he did say in an email that everyone who's disappointed they didn't win, that you should know that he's never missed a show and, you know, listens to every single show and has for years. And that he's really, really interested in all the permaculture stuff that's going on down there at Joshua Hughes Farm down in Costa Rica. And it's going to, you know, not just take a vacation, but really use it as a learning experience and is going to take full advantage of the entire situation. And in fact, I have a message here from Joshua that says, a couple of your listeners have been in touch with me and are excited to learn about permaculture. I go back and forth with my faith in people's desire to change. Thanks for fanning the flames of revolution. So there you go. That's cool. I like fanning revolutionary flames. You know when I can. So, yeah, thanks very much to everybody who participated in that. Of course, it's always time to donate to the Scott Horton Show. If you want to support, you can do monthly payments of whatever you like by way of PayPal. You can pay by way of Bitcoin. Anyone who donates $100 or more, you get a QR code silver commodity disc, 1 ounce of silver, with a QR code on the back so that you scan. It tells you the instant real-time spot price. which is the greatest invention in the history of currency, if you ask me. CommodityDiscs.com. You get one of those. And while supplies last, you can get Sheldon Richman's book, Your Money or Your Life Against the Income Tax. You can get Charles Goyette's book, Red, Blue, and Broke All Over. If you're not familiar with Goyette, anti-war libertarian, formerly sort of pseudo-conservative, but not really, radio host out of Phoenix, Arizona, hardcore Austrian school, hard money guy. He wrote The Dollar Meltdown, and this one is Red, Blue, and Broke All Over. You can get that, too. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate to find out all about that. And for the people who send me bitcoins, thanks, man. I love it when you do that. And, of course, you can send just little tiny pieces of bitcoins. Whatever, dude. I like bitcoins. For as much my C drive as I'm giving up to the Bitcoin blockchain data, I should get some bitcoins. Wouldn't you agree? So bitcoin me at scotthorton.org/donate. You can find all that. Okay, enough of that. What time is it? Okay, good. Cuban embassy is opening in D.C. today. Well, I don't really care about embassies and state relations, but the point is that symbolic of the ending of the American Cold War with Cuba. And I'm sure it's actually still in place in a handful of ways or more. I don't exactly know all the rules and regulations, but it's progress. And I absolutely support, and all libertarians should support, Obama's move to normalize relations. Now, the problem there, of course, is double-edged sword. Cuba is not normalizing relations with a normal country in a normal time. They're not normalizing relations with a temporary, limited constitutional republic. They're dealing with the empire, the 700-zillion-ton gorilla, just 90 miles off their shore. So, you know, of course, this very well could mean that the Americans find ways to just come in here and steal the whole damn country away. I'm sure there are a lot of Cubans who are worried about that. Probably happy to be shaking off at least some communism. But I don't think that means they necessarily want to sell all their property to people from somewhere else. But anyway, so we'll see how that works, you know. Anyway, it's always the right thing to stop doing the wrong thing, though. And the Cold War against the people of Cuba is ridiculous. And, hey, hasn't worked. Just like the Iraq sanctions, you know, if the story is the embargo, the blockade, is in order to induce a regime change, well, it's been in place since 1959, right? So it's still Fidel and his brother up there. So science says that didn't work. Just punished a bunch of innocent civilians for basically being the prisoners of a communist dictatorship. And of course, it's our government acting like a communist dictatorship itself, preventing Americans from traveling and trading and doing business with people there, as a supposedly reaction to their communism, which really it's their independence. America doesn't care if a country is a communist country or not. It's whether they're willing to take orders or not. But anyway, I'm very happy to see progress along those lines. And then the other bit of news that I guess I don't know much about to tell you, so I'll just mention that it happened, is that there was a suicide attack. You can watch the footage of it if you look at my Twitter feed, but I don't know, man. It's a bunch of people at some kind of rally. They're all holding a flag and singing some chant, and there's some people standing around, and then blam. And it wasn't that big of a bomb, but it was a pretty close concentration of humans. And it is pretty ugly. And they're blaming it on ISIS, which I guess is possible. I think the PKK are more like the Basque separatists and usually just bomb the side of a building or something in order to make a statement and don't really kill people like that, right? Mostly? Oh.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm on the Liberty Radio Network. Here live noon to two weekdays, libertyradionetwork.com. And you can find all my archives at scotthorton.org. More than 3,800 interviews now going back to 2003 there, scotthorton.org. Again, join up the chat room at scotthorton.org/chat. All right, now it's time on the show for a segment called, see how I'm upping the production values here? I'm naming the segments now. This segment is called Liberal, Democratic, Fascist, Totalitarian Police State. Oh, racist, too. General Wesley Clark on MSNBC calling for concentration camps for American Muslims. No, really.
Generally, a lot of people would say you reap what you sow. So how do we fix self-radicalized lone wolves domestically?
Well, we've got to identify the people who are most likely to be radicalized. We've got to cut this off at the beginning. There are always a certain number of young people who are alienated. They don't get a job. They lost a girlfriend. Their family doesn't feel happy here. Mm-hmm. And we can watch the signs of that. And there are members of the community who will reach out to those people and bring them back in and encourage them to look at their blessings here. But I do think on a national policy level, we need to look at what self-radicalization means, because we are at war with this group of terrorists. They do have an ideology. In World War II, if someone supported Nazi Germany at the expense of the United States, we didn't say that was freedom of speech. We put him in a camp. They were prisoners of war. So if these people are radicalized and they don't support the United States and they're disloyal to the United States as a matter of principle, fine, that's their right. It's our right and our obligation to segregate them from the normal community for the duration of the conflict. And I think we're going to have to increasingly get tough on this, not only in the United States, but our allied nations like Britain and Germany and France are going to have to look at their domestic law procedures.
General Wesley Clark, as always, great to see you, sir. Thanks for your time, and I want to pass along
to our
viewers.
You got to love, too, don't you, how the guy's just like, all right, great. Have a nice day, General. No follow-up question there. Well, so a lot to parse. I guess I should have, like, the whole transcript of this here, so I make sure I don't miss anything. But there's a lot there. First of all, in World War II, they didn't just intern people who said they loved Hitler. Which itself would have been illegal. But they interned all the Japanese on the West Coast. Hundreds of thousands of people. Did he forget that? His criteria for whether a young Muslim man should be separated from the rest of us is whether he's alienated or not. Whether he's unhappy or not. What about Faisal Shahzad? He had a big house and a professional job and a wife and a car. He tried to blow up Times Square because he traveled to Pakistan and witnessed the results of American drone strikes there. And, of course, he says, and we can know that, you know, we can watch and see what people are thinking, what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. Right, of course. And so if what he's talking about here, without even blinking, without even a thought otherwise, nor his MSNBC supposed liberal Democrat host, he's completely throwing the Fourth and Fifth Amendments out the window here. You have a right to be pro-ISIS, and no, he does not have the right to lock you up for that, the way he claims. The Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, sorry to sound like a kindergarten teacher, I don't mean to be insulting, but look what I'm up against. Any power that is delegated by the Constitution to the Congress, the President, or the court in any of the first six, seven articles, whatever the hell is, seven articles of the Constitution, any power in there that you could possibly read as saying government has XYZ power, whatever variable power you call it, anything like that is trumped by the Ten Amendments, the Bill of Rights. And then, for that matter, the 13th Amendment and the whatever that came later, too. That's what an amendment is. It's, this is extra added on top just to make sure. There's no power for the government granted for them to take people's guns away. But we're going to make sure that we ban you from doing that. Just in case you think you do have that power, this law says that no, you can't. Can't tell us which church to go to. Can't tell us that we can't go to whatever church we want to go to. You can't tell us what to say, what we're allowed to say, who to associate with, whether we can own a gun or not. You can't quarter soldiers in our houses. You can't come in our houses without a separate civilian magistrate agreeing that there is probable cause to believe that there is specific evidence of a crime within whatever, blah, blah, yeah. And then the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So now people say, well, you know, in Article 1, Section 9, it says they can't suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Congress, Article 1, Congress cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus unless there's a rebellion or an invasion. Okay, well, in this case, there's not a rebellion or an invasion. A couple of lone wolf attacks is not a rebellion or an invasion. And it doesn't matter what implied power is in Article 1, Section 9, because the Fifth Amendment came and stomped it down and said, no, however you read the implication that they cannot do it, the restriction in Article 1, Section 9, that they cannot do it unless these circumstances, that's not really saying they do have the authority to do it. But it doesn't matter, because the Fifth Amendment overrules that anyway. And you'll notice in the entire Bill of Rights, it doesn't say citizens anywhere. People. As the courts call them, U.S. persons. And that means American citizens here or anywhere else in the world we go, or any other person within the jurisdiction of the United States government. And for him to say, oh, we're at war, blah, blah, is just a figure of speech. That's like saying we have a war on cancer. Doesn't mean anything. Other than, you know, a loophole. But that's Wesley Clark, the liberal Democrat who tried to run for the nomination in 2004 to oppose George W. Bush. Favorite of Daily Coast kids everywhere, as Justin Raimondo points out. Favorite of Michael Moore. Says, hey, if there are young Arabs or young Muslims we're suspicious of, they ought to be locked up. And here's a riddle for you, American police state. Most American Arabs are Christians, not Muslims. And most American Muslims are Asian, not Arab. So, anyway, have fun profiling us and throwing us in detention camps, you know, because of what we might do. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom. fff.org/subscribe. All right, you guys, welcome back. Now, yeah, I'm Scott Horton. Hey, listen, if you ever read Reason Magazine, which you might do because Jesse Walker writes there, if you read there, you'll find, if you read Jesse Walker, I think, specifically, you'll find that mental illness or political radicalization are both, or religious devotion, all three. These are all very, very, very lousy indicators of people's future behavior, or especially violent behavior. Yeah, people crazy out of their minds. Still never hurt anyone. Yeah, people who, well, like you and me, have very strong political convictions. Doesn't mean and we're going to shoot innocent people over it. You have people who are such devoted Muslims, they've got the permanent bruise mark on their forehead from having their head to the floor worshiping God. Who have never, would never, will never hurt anyone. And they might really, really hate the war in Afghanistan, too, and still would never hurt anyone. So, you know what's an indicator of whether someone might hurt someone? Threats. Ow, kind of bit my cheek there. Sorry. Threats. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hurt a bunch of people. That kind of thing, yeah. Watch closely. And I'm talking from the cop's point of view. If we're talking about people you know, and you have your own kind of indicators, and you think that crazy dude is actually ready to take a step, well, that's something different. You know, I don't know. I'd trust your judgment, assuming you're a real human being and not a government employee. But I'm talking about what's probable cause. Hey, what's the standard that General Clark would have instituted for which Americans should be put in concentration camps? Because of what they might do, according to what they believe that's supposedly wrong. That's the Democrats, right? Just wait till Jeb comes. Wesley Clark, he's one of the nice guys. Compared to, you know, those real mean totalitarian warmongers, the right. Yikes. Oh, so my problem is I couldn't get Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights on. And the reason I wanted him on to talk about this is because I love hearing him talk about stuff like this, man. He's great. And I don't even have to have my act together. I can just say, oh, no, Michael Ratner, what happened? And he'll talk for 15 minutes. He'll take care of everything. He's awesome. Unfortunately, he's at the celebrations over the opening of the Cuba embassy thing today. We'll see if I can get him on for you tomorrow. Same with Marjorie Cohen. She's also great. Or Cohen, I'm sorry. She's also fantastic and busy, unfortunately. But, you know, here's the thing, too, I got to add to this. I meant to cram this all in one segment, but unfortunately couldn't. The NDAA. Remember that back in 2012... The NDAA, that stands for the National Defense Authorization Act. That's the thing that they pass every year or two where they appropriate more than half $1 trillion in direct money to the Pentagon. And then, of course, you know, there's another $1 trillion worth of slush fund money for the wars, care and feeding of the wounded troops, care and feeding of the nuclear weapons, and all of these things that add up to more than $1 trillion a year. And I got multiple sources for that, left, right, and center, and nonpartisan altogether. In fact, Mother Jones, the Independent Institute, Center for Public Integrity, and there was somebody on the right, too. Independent Institute is libertarian. There is a right-wing group. Was it somebody associated with Michael Osterlink or something? I forget. Anyway, there's a conservative group somewhere that put out numbers just like that too. $1 trillion a year. So left, right, libertarian, and nonpartisan somewhere, although you can count points off for, I can't remember my conservative footnote there. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It is $1 trillion a year. Bob Higgs says so. Yeah, there's that. Anyway. The NDAA that they passed in 2012 gives the government the power to turn U.S. persons, that includes citizens or whoever else, over to the military rather than to have them arrested by the FBI and held by the U.S. Bureau of Prisons and this and that civilian process. Send them to Guantanamo. That is legal now. That is not hyperbole. That you or me, your youngest, most innocent family member that you could think of, the president could have them declared a terrorist and sent away without benefit of any process or remedy or challenge or legal authority in the first place. Real legal authority. Again, the Fifth Amendment bans this kind of thing. And one of the judges, a federal judge in New York City, struck it down and said, you can't do this. Sided with the plaintiffs that, hey, I'm an associated forest. That's the other thing. It's very broad language. People like Chris Hedges, who is formerly a New York Times reporter, says, hey, I got Hezbollah in my cell phone. So are you telling me that you could put me in military detention? And the judge agreed, one, he had standing. If I remember it right, it was based on Chris Hedges' standing, right? And two, that, and Dan Ellsberg, too, I guess. And that, you're right. They don't have the authority to do this. She struck it down. A higher court then reversed her ruling. And then the Supreme Court refused to hear it. So it is now that latest federal court. Their word is law on this. So in other words, President Wesley Clark, Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, or any of the rest of these goons right now under the color of law could do exactly what he's proposing. Send the NSA to just troll Facebook for anybody who looks mad enough that we want to go ahead and isolate them. In fact, what they'll probably do is come up with an algorithm, right? So it's nobody's responsibility. Let the computer decide who's over the line or not. That'd be perfect, right? But, you know, this is the thing, man. Remember they said they convinced you with this, didn't they? Well, maybe not you. Somebody you know, people in your neighborhood, we gotta fight them over there so that we don't have to fight them here. But see, that was a lie. Fighting them over there only made more and more and more and more of them. And all the scaremongering and lying and propagandizing about American Muslims, all the entrapment jobs and all the rest of it, used to gin up fear to support the foreign policy, is now marginalizing American Arabs and Muslims to such a degree that they actually are doing attacks like Chattanooga, like Fort Hood. And those are not FBI, you know, entrapment inside jobs, of which there are scores and scores and hundreds. Read The Terror Factory by Trevor Aronson about that. But there are, on the margin, there are people now, and I've been, goddammit, I've been warning you about this for years. And I guess specifically in the context of Somalia, but not only. There's a huge Somalian diaspora in Minnesota, and that, 24 of these guys, a couple of dozen of these guys, have traveled to Somalia to fight, where obviously they could have stayed. We have to stop being involved over there so that we stop recruiting wolves against us here. Lone wolves, I meant to say. You know what I mean, god dang it. Clock ticking under pressure.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, guys, welcome back. All right, I was going to move on to Iran, but nah, this came out. Texas residents attempt to block plan for Muslim cemetery. It's from Farmersville, Texas, which they say is, hey, sorry, I'm from here my whole life long, but there's about 10,000 towns in this state, okay? It's bigger than the country you're from. So leave me alone. I don't know. Farmersville, 35 miles northeast of Dallas, they say. And they're going to make a Muslim cemetery there. And then these idiots. It's just life during wartime, man. It's all based on lies. And this David J. Meeks, pastor of Bethlehem Baptist Church, told the Dallas Morning News, "The concern for us is the radical element of Islam." Oh, God. How can we stop a mosque or a madrasa training center? Oh, I see. Yeah. First, you let the Muslims have, you know, the ones who are from there. First, you let them have a cemetery. The next thing you know, they'll build a mosque. And then, you know what happens at mosques, right? Yeah, they practice their religion there and stuff, and that's really scary. Also, they probably speak in weird languages that I can't understand, which means they're probably talking about me, which makes me really nervous. Oh, and then let's go ahead and throw in Madrasa Training Center. Oh, now we're in Pakistan, and now Al-Qaeda is going to build a training camp in Farmersville for poor David J. Meeks to have to run from in cowardly terror. Run, David J. Meeks, run. You coward. And there better be white Christians out defending these people, or I'm going to be pissed. I don't know. You know, that's part of no one having any history whatsoever. I know it's cherry picking. There's a lot of bad in history. But have you ever heard of the notion that America was founded on the principle of religious liberty virtually above all others? As step one of our entire common agreement here is that human beings are born free, naturally, that they own their own minds and can believe what they want. And that to prevent them from believing what they want and practicing their beliefs the way they want is the ultimate form of tyranny and slavery. Oh no, what if they build a mosque? Are you kidding me? You know how many mosques there are in Texas? There's probably 10,000 mosques in Texas. Now you're terrified because I said that? Or now you realize that that's stupid to be afraid of a mosque? What the hell is this? These are grown adult human beings. I know, the Southern Baptist Church, blah, blah. You know what they are? They're victims of talk radio. They're victims of Republican propaganda. That says that the reason they hate us isn't because George H.W. Bush put the U.S. military on the ground on the Arabian Peninsula and stayed there so that Bill Clinton could then starve 500,000 tiny, screaming babies to
death from there. Oh, no, they hate us because they got a bad religion that makes them hate good things, like what George Bush and Bill Clinton do. How stupid do you have to be to believe that? That there's no such thing as the 1990s? Shut up! There's no such thing as the 1990s! They hate us because they're Muslims and we're good. And because after 15 years of this, I still don't want to try to learn anything more about this. What do you mean H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton killed a million Iraqis to death from the holy Arabian Peninsula of Mecca and Medina? What the hell does that have to do with anything? What is, 60 years, 50 years, whatever, of, 70 years of support for Israel and their domination of the people of Palestine have to do with it? 48 years of occupation of the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, East Jerusalem. And I guess Golan, too, that whole time. I forget when they took Golan. Say more. Anyway. Oh, no, what does that have to do with it? The Israelis shooting American M-16s and flying American F-16s and killing civilians with them. On our dime. Day in, day out, for generations on end. Yeah, but that's way over on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean. What does that have to do with what people from Egypt or Saudi might think of us? You know what we ought to do? We ought to abandon freedom of religion. Because a bunch of lying warmongers said that it's their religion that makes them hate me. So let's get to work on tearing down the highest principle of American society. It long predates the First Amendment. Because what? Because some lying idiot on talk radio told you to be afraid? Trying to block them from building a cemetery? Because it might lead to a mosque, and then that could lead to a Pakistani Al-Qaeda madrasa training camp? Really? Is there a judge somewhere in North Texas who's telling these people tough shit? Anyway, what kind of horrible people spend their day doing this? It's like I told the lady at the DMV, this is your life. You are a bureaucrat. That was the worst thing I could think of to say to her, you know. This is who you are. This is what you do. Yeah, you know, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to spend all my energy trying to stop people from making a cemetery for, you know, when the people they love die and they want to bury them. We can't have that kind of thing. They're just going to wrap them in a sheet and throw them in the ground and pollute our groundwater. No, they're going to build a giant concrete vault. All you had to do was ask, like the AP reporter asked. Oh, yes, they'll certainly be in coffins in a vault. Thank you very much for asking. I don't know. I hate being hyperbolic because I don't think that there's, you know, a gigantic mass murder of Arabs coming or anything like that. But it does remind you, doesn't it, of when you first learned about the Nazis when you were a kid and all the Jews that got killed and you asked, well, why didn't they all run first, you know? Wasn't it pretty obvious for quite a few years leading up to this thing that they should get the hell out of there? Of course, this is America. This is the place where everybody tries to run to. You know, if FDR will let them in. So where are people supposed to run from here if they can't have religious freedom here? If they got to worry about presidential candidates, former presidential candidates, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO saying it's time soon to put American Muslims in concentration camps if they're suspected of disloyalty. I'm sorry, because the whole thing sounds stupid. I can't believe we're having this conversation. It's stupid. And as much as I hate the state, I think in the back of my mind, just from all my government school brainwashing as a kid, that no, that can't happen here, because we do have constitutional institutions that will eventually, in some fashion, prevent it from getting that freaking bad, right? Right? But Guantanamo Bay has been open for 14 years. All the torturers got away with it. All the guys that started the war and manufactured the propaganda to get us into it got away with it. Obama got away with killing Alaki and his son. What can't they do? Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's The Scott Horton Show. Libertarian foreign policy stuff, mostly. Alright, so, again, thanks to Tom Woods for having me on. The subject, of course, was the Iran nuclear deal and Rand Paul's opposition to it. I also did a similar interview, pretty close to the same thing, if you want to hear the same thing again, with Mark Claire on the Lions of Liberty. They have a thing called Rand Paul, what is it? Rand Pauluses and Minuses. This is Rand Pauluses and Minuses, where they cover Rand Paul. And so they interviewed me about the Iran deal and about Rand. It's pretty much the same thing as the Tom Woods interview, but I don't know if you want to hear it. Check it out. I tweeted it out this morning. You can find it on YouTube. Just Google my name and Mark Claire, and it'll come up. Oh, it's M-A-R-C, not K, on Mark there if you want to listen to that. Anyway, so this guy had emailed me and asked me a couple follow-up questions, and he emailed me back and said, never mind, I heard your interview on Tom Woods. You pretty much covered this, but I thought, well, yeah, it's important to cover on the show, too. Make sure, you know, it's clear, or at least I get to have my say on it, whatever it is. If it's a factual thing or an opinion-y thing. He says, I've heard you say Iran will now have the most strenuous nuclear inspections in the history of the world. Could you elaborate some on that? Iran will have 24 days in the this and that. Is that less time than other countries such as Iraq typically had? Had there ever been a country that allowed inspection of their military installations? All right, so last thing first. No, I don't think so. I don't think there ever has. And with Iraq, it was different at different times. They did have, but that was also not under the Non-Proliferation Treaty and the Safeguards Agreement or any negotiation. That was under, you know, with a gun to his head at the end of the war as part of the ceasefire of the war. So it wasn't really, international law as much as his ceasefire terms to, you know, the American-backed alliance, so to speak. So there's a different set of regulations involved there in the blockade against Iraq and the inspections regime there. They created UNMOVIC and then UNSCOM, I think in that order. Could have been the other way around, were the two different groups that... Scott Ritter recently wrote a history of all of this for the New York Review of Books, by the way. But I think that's the basic answer, is that in some sense, probably the Iraq inspections were more intrusive, but it was an entirely different regime of law being implemented compared to what's going on here. We didn't just whoop Iran in a war and make them surrender on our terms. It was a negotiation. And then now on the 24 days thing, I'll get to that again in a second because he asks it again at the end in a better, more accurate context. And then the thing about the prisoners, apparently one of those guys is a missionary. Another one was working for the CIA on a rogue mission or some kind of weird thing. You can read about it in the New York Times. It's not, you know, a big conspiracy theory or anything. Another one is a Washington Post reporter who's accused of being a spy. Maybe he is. I don't know. But anyway, I'm all for the American government negotiating their release. And of course, if we have this nuclear deal and we begin warming up our relationship with Iran, then we, meaning our government-to-government relationship, then it should be easier to negotiate their release. I mean, how disingenuous. Is anybody taking that seriously, really? When people are saying, nuh-uh, they should have threw in the hostages as a deal killer. Then that would have been a good deal. Come on. We can negotiate the prisoner thing later. That's okay. None of them are going to be executed this week or anything, I don't think. And then now the last two are pretty much the same thing again. The too much notice and the allowance for inspection of military installations. So here, that's the context I was talking about, the proper context of military installations. So here's what you need to understand. At Natanz, where they enrich uranium. At Fordo, where they no longer will be enriching nuclear material whatsoever. At Iraq, the, reactor that is soon to be reconfigured to no longer use heavy water or produce weapons-grade plutonium, at all of their centrifuge facilities, at their mines, at their refinery where they take the ore and turn it into refined yellow cake uranium, like in the old bogus accusations against Saddam. Remember the yellow cake? At every step of that nuclear process in Iran, every step of it, there will be permanent inspections. There ain't no surprise to it. They're standing there. They got cameras, they got seals, they got little handheld doo-wackies like on Star Trek that beep if something goes wrong. That is the world's most inspected nuclear program, by far. The normal safeguards agreement under the Non-Proliferation Treaty says that they get to monitor places where there's actual nuclear material being introduced into machinery and changed from one thing to another. Here they're going to be inspecting and monitoring the factory where they make the centrifuges in the first place. Where they dig the ore out of the ground. Now, the military installations is a separate issue, and it's also a stupid red herring. You know, this whole thing about there was a secret test chamber at Parchin is just a lie. And Gareth Porter's completely debunked that. And you know what? Not only has Gareth Porter completely debunked it, but Robert Kelly, the former chief inspector of the International Atomic Energy Agency, has completely debunked it as well. And even Ollie Heinonen, who is the most hawkish of the former IAEA officials, now at Harvard, he's the guy who's always feeding David Albright all his BS talking points. Has himself said, come on, we've been there. There's nothing there. And the whole test chamber that they supposedly built there, that wouldn't be useful for testing the implosion system for a nuclear warhead anyway. And there's no reason to believe any of the propaganda about the Russian scientist who supposedly got the contract to help create the thing. The whole story is just make-believe. The guy wasn't even a nuclear scientist at all. His expert was implosions for creating nanodiamonds for use in industry. The whole thing is just a hoax. It's like the rest of the alleged studies and so-called possible military dimensions. Nonsense. And so now, yes, they will have 24 days if the Iranians object and hem and haw as much as they can, then at a maximum of 24 days between we want to inspect this military site and they get to. Basically. But so what? Give me a break. Like America all of a sudden doesn't have satellites anymore. Like all of a sudden there's no longer any spies or any intelligence outside of the inspection regime and we'll be just completely blind to them shutting down an entire secret nuclear research facility and moving it from a building that the inspectors say they want to inspect after they say they want to inspect it, but before they get a chance to. Come on. This is stupid. And the whole context here, again, well, they're trying to play it without context. Those damn 12th Imam, blah, blah, radical Islam, Iran, terrorist, nuclear bomb, scary nonsense. But the truth is, here they are bending over backwards and scaling back their nuclear program beyond all reason and scaling up their inspections regime beyond any precedent. And now is when they're going to sneakily try to do some experiments at a military base somewhere and sneak out and make a bomb when they could have done that for the past few years and didn't. They were spinning 20,000 centrifuges a couple of weeks ago. The whole thing is nonsense, you know, and the same thing with the arms embargo. They go, oh, my God, they're going to lift the arms embargo and then Russia and China will be able to sell them conventional weapons. Well, actually, Russia already sells some conventional weapons, including anti-aircraft stuff. That's going to be a real pain for Americans if they ever try to bomb them at their leisure. Anyway, the Chinese have already sold them sea skimming supersonic ship killer missiles. And anyway, the whole point of the arms embargo being lifted is it's not lifted for 5 or 7 years or something like that after they've been behaving themselves under the rest of the terms of the deal, at which point it shouldn't matter anymore anyway, right? So that's me handling all those objections that I could think of so far anyway and this list that the guy asked me about. Hope that was good enough for you.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, what happened to the music? You guys still hear it? I sure can't. I like that. That's Dresden 45, by the way. Can you guys hear me? You can't answer me if you don't. All right. Good. Eric in the chat room here has sent a link to this piece by Jonathan Schwartz about how the Americans used the inspection teams in Iraq to try to do a coup d'etat against Saddam Hussein back in 1996, a story that Scott Ritter has told. Again, that's in the London Review of Books thing that Scott Ritter wrote up as well. Yeah, Jonathan Schwartz, man. Everything that guy writes is smart. And yeah, he's a left liberal, whatever, so I'm not saying that about his economics or whatever, but when it comes to Iraq wars and things like that, the dude knows what he's talking about. I'm really glad to see he's over at The Intercept, man. That's cool. Tiny Revolution is his old blog. He's good at picking up them little facts that slip through the cracks, you know? All right. So thanks for that, Lincoln, reminding me of that. Okay, now, so the Israeli pressure. First of all, the Iran deal. Ron Paul says Iran agreement boosts peace, defeats neocons. Oh, Rand. Anyway, AIPAC considering... Oh, I should tell you, that's at the Ron Paul Institute. It'll be running on antiwar.com tomorrow. It came out too late last night. It'll run on antiwar.com tomorrow. RonPaulInstitute.org. Iran agreement boosts peace, defeats neocons. And there's also a great video interview of him with Danny McAdams about it, too. AIPAC considering nuclear option to foil Iran deal. AIPAC has established a new tax-exempt lobbying group, Citizens for a Nuclear-Free Iran. And straight up, they're just threatening Democrats. They're going to spend money not just lobbying, but threaten to bankroll any challengers, any primary challengers to any Democrats who cross them on this. Talk about pushing it. Man, I should have these in a better order. Here is Philip Weiss, Mondo Weiss blog. 9 reasons Obama is going to win on Iran. The first reason, Netanyahu. He's such a clown. He makes it easy for the president. In fact, Weiss says that Obama keeps using the name Netanyahu. They focus group tested this sumbitch now. Oh, you know who? I'm sorry. We can't always do what Netanyahu wants because Netanyahu is against it and Netanyahu thinks this and that. But we're going to do the best we can anyway. Netanyahu, Netanyahu, Netanyahu. Because people just hate him because he's just terrible. So that's great. James North, he quotes James North. Phil Weiss does, his co-author here. Can you imagine the politics of this deal if Israel had a sophisticated, attractive, eloquent leader? Well, if they're sophisticated, they probably would have gone along with it instead of trying to drive as much distance between the U.S. and Israel as they possibly could. But anyway, silver linings, you know. Let's see, other reasons. Obama, he's not going out like a lame duck. It's more like, you can't stop me now. Do whatever I want time for him and get away with it with confidence kind of a deal. The American people are behind it. The liberal Zionists are behind it. J Street and everybody to the left of them. And, well, just Democratic voters. American Jews are vote Democrat by, I think, high 70s or 80-something percent even. It's like 85 to 15% Democrats among American Jews. And so they just support the rank and file of the Jewish organizations. They support the president and they support the peace deal. And, you know, it's a class thing, too. It is. You look at, you know, and this is the same with any group, any ethnic group. The richer you get, the further to the right you move, right? With exceptions. But generally, that's true. And anyway. Well, because when you're that rich, you're that much better than everyone else. And so fascist solutions seem to make more sense, right? Anyway, Feinstein's going to support the deal. Pelosi's supporting the deal. Charles Schumer is going, well, he's number 6 on the deal. I like the way he says Hillary Clinton, she's as shrewd as they come and figured she can survive supporting the deal. She's between a rock and a hard place. Cross the Israel lobby or come out against the president that she just finished being the Secretary of State for in his great Secretary of State-ish accomplishment, accomplished by her successor there. So she'd have to really break with Team America that she was at the very highest level of in Thomas Jefferson's old spot to go with Israel on this one. But she, shrewd as she is, figured she can survive by support the deal and still survive politically anyway. So that's a pretty strong indicator. I like Phil Weiss's analysis. He's a smart guy. And then he talks about Charles Schumer and how, well, he reads through the lines, but he says it's pretty damn clear that Schumer is going to go with Obama on this. In fact, he even said, does he have the quote in here? No, he doesn't have the quote in here. Well, no, he paraphrases him, though. Check it out. So I'm not going to follow the link to the actual quote because it's Phil Weiss paraphrasing him and it's close enough. Reread his remarks to that Orthodox Jewish audience in June, warning them that when it comes to dual loyalty, he has to put aside the interests of the Jewish people and support the interests of the American people. Well, now that's a complete lie. There are 6 million American Jews. They're not Americans? What is he even talking about? He, in the first part of that, is committing the horrible sin, if anyone non-Jewish says so, that Israel is all Jews and all Jews are Israel and these are all indistinguishable things. For God's sake, discriminate, man. And never even mind that the interests of the Israeli people are in this deal, too. Never mind what stupid freaking Netanyahu wants, who's wrong about everything always. That's a side issue, though. But when it comes to dual loyalty, he needs to put the interests of the U.S. state, you know, the one where he's sworn to our Constitution, not to a foreign power. And if there's a real conflict on this, and in Schumer's own words, hey, man, sorry, you're going to side with America. Now, the Republicans have cover. They can pretend it's a partisan issue, when really what they are is traitors. Well, not really traitors, but they're selling their country out. They're agents of a foreign power, and they're trying to undermine what is a powerful de facto peace deal in order to try to cause conflict on behalf of a foreign power. So, I don't know legal definition of treason, but it sure is crappy. And anyway, oh, I thought this one was funny, too, as the music's playing here. Iran's Jewish community leader calls Netanyahu narcissistic, delusional, after Netanyahu claims that Iran is the new Nazi Germany. There are about 50,000 Jews live in Iran, happily, and have representation in the parliament, etc. Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, guys, welcome back. So the New York Times is saying that the Islamic State is firing chemical shells, chlorine shells. So I don't know if this is war propaganda or if they're admitting in a sideways kind of a fashion that, yeah, all those reports that you heard that only Assad could be using chlorine bombs in this war really don't hold up so much. Kind of like the old copper cord EFPs in Iraq in 07. Remember that? Yeah, but we say so. But we insist that it's so. No, that's not good enough. Okay, call off the whole press conference. We gotta go. Anyway, I don't know. Why wouldn't they? In fact, I got a tweet from a guy a few weeks back that told me, when I was fighting in Ramadi in 2004 or 5 or something, they attacked us with chlorine. We had to carry around gas masks for a month after that. So something, and in fact, this New York Times article says the same thing. That the Sunni-based insurgency in Iraq War II were known to use these things, and the Islamic State is continuing that same tradition. Now, as far as the Turkey thing that I mentioned earlier, you know, Coburn has been saying, this is on his, you know, top three list of things that must be done. Turkey must close the border to jihadists trying to travel to Syria. And so I don't know whether it was really an ISIS car bomb. Maybe they decided that Erdogan isn't doing enough, or maybe he's doing too much for Al-Qaeda and not enough for the Islamic State. Is that it? Or maybe it was the PKK and it was a revenge attack for all the support for the Islamic State that's been attacking the Kurds when they thought they had a deal. Who knows? But I guess if it really was the Islamic State, or if it really does get blamed on the Islamic State, finally, then I wonder, I guess it opens up the possibility of a change in policy there. Where they might decide that, you know, geez, this is not really like creating a new UAE in the former Syria. It's more like creating a nightmare. Maybe it's not that good of an idea to do. But I don't know. Gotta admit, the Americans run the empire, and they clearly have not been pressuring the Turks to knock all this off. Hell, Charles Lister, the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda expert at the Brookings Institution, has even written about how there is a joint U.S.-Saudi base in Turkey where they organize the Army of Conquest, which is al-Nusra. And then whatever friends the Americans and their NATO and GCC allies can stick in there with them. I don't know what's the latest from the Battle of Fallujah. Here's a massive car bomb killed 200 or 100 people in an Iraqi marketplace in the Diyala province, 20 miles northeast of Baghdad, which was supposed to be devoid of Islamic State fighters, was said to be free of them in the Orwellian definition. But I guess not. And now this is really important too, even though it's really just a preview. Brad Hoff over at Levant Report has this piece. Former Defense Intelligence Director Michael Flynn comments publicly on the 2012 DIA Islamic State report. So here's this retired general. I believe he was at SOCOM. I don't know if he was at JSOC. I don't know. He was the head of the DIA. So I don't know where I got it. He was a Special Forces SOCOM guy. He was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Did I get him confused with somebody else, or I read that somewhere or something? Anyway, he's the guy who we talked about, you might have heard on the interview with Gareth Porter last week, about how he said that the war in Iraq and the drone war, that is Bush and Obama's terror war policies, have just made matters worse and spread the terrorists all around and made them more powerful. And he's a guy who actually wants a hardcore, worse war against the Islamic State right now. And I don't know exactly what he hates about Iran or what he says should be done about Iran, but he's very hawkish on them too, I've read. Which is funny, since they're the ones fighting the Islamic State right now, or backing the Iraqi Shiite militias that Sistani called out to fight them. But anyway, so he's no libertarian or Andrew Bacevich. He's still a hardcore hawk, but he's honest enough to say that what we've done hasn't worked. It's making matters worse. And now here, remember, Judicial Watch got this DIA document a few weeks back, about 6 weeks ago now or something, where the DIA analyst is basically saying that, well, we and our allies are helping create an Islamic State, and there's a huge danger to Western Iraq that they could end up under its control. Saw this coming from August 2012. Well, now this guy, Michael Flynn, General Flynn, has done an interview with Al Jazeera that's going to be broadcast. It won't be broadcast until the 31st. Friday the 31st. God, really? But they have a quote from it, and check out what he says, man. From the Al Jazeera thing. Publicly commenting for the first time on a previously classified August 2012 DIA memo, which had predicted, quote, the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria. This is exactly what the supporting powers to the opposition want, and confirmed that, quote, the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda in Iraq are the major driving forces, driving the insurgency in Syria. The former DIA chief told Head to Head, that's the Al Jazeera program, that, quote, the administration didn't listen to these warnings issued by his agency's analysts. Quote, I don't know if they turned a blind eye, he said. I think it was a decision. I think it was a willful decision. But now, so, wow. That's what a blind eye means. To turn your blind eye. To make a willful decision to ignore a thing you know is happening. Now, I don't know how he says, it's all in the tone of voice, right? If he's just saying factually, I don't know if they turned a blind eye, but I think it was a willful decision. If that's the way he says it, then that's one thing. But he could, you know, the English language is kind of a mess. He could mean, well, I don't know if they turned a blind eye, but then if that's the way he's saying it, then he's contradicting himself a minute later when he says, I think it was a decision, a willful decision. Wow, don't we want to hear those sound bites, everybody? I know I do. Obama was calling the Islamic State junior varsity right as Fallujah was falling under their control in January of 2014. And, you know, hell, for you regular listeners, you know, we were covering the rise of this thing all along. From even back in the Bush years, we talked about neocon plans for destroying Syria. You know, coping with crumbling states and the clean break. Break Iran to break Syria to break Hezbollah so we could steal the Litani River. That's Israeli foreign policy in a nutshell right there. And certainly we've been covering this since the breakout of the Arab Spring. You know, it started as a revolt against American-backed kings and dictators. And then the Americans and the Saudis hijacked it, first in Libya, then in Syria. Then they did a coup d'etat and overthrew the results of the Arab Spring in Egypt. And they killed hundreds of thousands of people since, especially in Syria, but in Libya too.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
Me. You believe the show's already over again? No, it won't be the show again until tomorrow after this. Crying out loud. Hey, if you look at antiwar.com today, there's a great story by David Misner called Worse Than Benghazi. And it's at the Jacobin Mag, which I guess means they're commies or whatever. And in one weird statement, he just says, no one could have predicted the rise of the Islamic State. Hey, come on, man. Why don't you listen to the last 7 years of me interviewing Patrick Coburn? They first named themselves the Islamic State of Iraq in 2006, pal. And as soon as Obama took the side of the jihadists in Syria, you heard on this show the experts, prodded by me, saying, yeah, that's what we're in danger of right now. You can read my article from a year before it happened. In the Future Freedom Foundation, where I say they're creating the real Islamic State right now. Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring is the name of the article. And actually, it started as a transcript of a gigantic, really long answer that I gave someone on a radio show when they asked me, so what's with this whole Arab Spring thing anyway? And I was saying, yeah, if you look at what's going on right now in Syria, basically, Baghdad doesn't really control Western Iraq, and the Islamic State is now breaking off, or al-Nusra. At that point, it wasn't clear yet. All the divisions weren't clear yet. It was now the al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda in Syria, has renamed itself the Islamic State. This is when there's a power struggle between Baghdadi and Golani, and it wasn't clear yet. The final break from al-Qaeda hadn't happened yet, and I was saying, see, so it's the rise of, anyway. Wrong, Misner. Predicted right here on this show. Well over a year in advance. And, yeah, way more years in advance. But anyway, other than that one big stupid line in this article, I think it's great. Worse than Benghazi is the entire Libya war. And it's Hillary's role in it. And he's relying in part on those Washington Times scoops about how Denis Kucinich and the military and the CIA, Carter Ham, the general in charge of AFRICOM, tried to stop the war. A general tried to stop the war. And the Secretary of State stomped on his head and shut it down. The Gaddafis were ready to deal. And she refused to deal. This is the Clinton Doctrine. It's sick. It's really bad. The fact that American liberals are just pretending that the Libya war never happened is just incredible. I don't know how that's going to play out in the, you know, coming months and year, next year and a half through the debates and whatever, but holy crap, does she have a lot to answer for with that one. As a not very, well, kind of somewhat wise businessman once told me, once you make a decision, you made that decision. Once it's a decision and you made it, then you made it. You got to do it because it's a decision now. And that's what a decision is. It's a thing that you make. And once it's a... Boy, Got it right through her head. We're doing this thing. And then nothing could stop her. Holy crap. And it's all Obama's fault, don't get me wrong. But it's all Obama's fault because she made him do it. They're both 100% guilty as hell for that. And I admit that every time I complain about the aftermath of the war in Libya, there's a voice in the back of my head saying, careful, man, you complain about this too much, you're going to help build the pressure for doing something about it. Oh no, it's our mess. Pottery barn rule. Now we got to go and build them a democracy and train up their army and fight an insurgency. If not our army, what band of mercenaries are they going to get to do it? Anyway, I don't know what the hell's going to happen in Libya. It used to be three nations back before World War II. What's it going to be now? Nothing? Just a land of militia violence, I guess? Officials say Yemeni rebels thwart advance in embattled aid, and this is from the American-Saudi war in Yemen. I told you that the government in exile is creating a beachhead there in the port town of Aden. And apparently, no, the Houthis have come and driven them back again. And then this, I'll mention it, but I haven't even had a chance to read it yet. But it's really important based on the headline. And I've read a few things by this guy Ryan Grimm before that I think were good. And anyway, the headline is, oh, and this is from April the 20th. Iran warned the Houthis against Yemen takeover. Told them not to go to Sana'a because of the reaction they would provoke, according to their sources. I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to read through this all yet, but you can look at it. It's at the Huffington Post, huffingtonpost.com. Everybody says the Houthis are Iranian sock puppets, but everybody who actually knows about it says that it's not true. It's just a talking point of warmongers. And then, in fact, it's the talking point of the same Israeli-based war party that's opposed to Iran on everything. And of course, it's Netanyahu's line that he gave in his congressional speech and that the war party keeps repeating, Iran is on the march. Krauthammer wrote this in the Washington Post. Iran is creating an empire across the Middle East. Really? Well, the major gain that they've made is America got rid of Saddam for them and then stayed for 8 years and fought a civil war on behalf of the most Iran-backed factions, the Dawa Party and the Supreme Islamic Council and their militia, the Bada Brigade. So, that's America marching as Iran's imperial army. I think Americans aren't allowed to complain about that in the context of blaming Iran and using it, and especially by Iraq's war supporters who now want to blame Iran and use it as an excuse to prevent a deal with them, and which we all know really is just code, as the commies might say, or the progressives might say, for they want a real war. And that's the biggest thing that they've done. Now, the Houthi alliance hardly exists at all. I mean, the Iranians, I guess, are friendly with them, but has anybody even shown that they really have given them any money or weapons or anything? They got plenty of weapons in Yemen. Nobody says that there's a lack of guns. Prices, even in the middle of a war, prices on the market are still, you know, reasonable for the average guy to get an AK. They got plenty of weapons. They're awash in weapons like Americans have guns. They have guns. And so that's really not it. And the Iranians don't have a bunch of, what are they going to do? Send them a bunch of tanks that they don't have? So it's ridiculous. They say they blame Iran and basically pretend that the government of Syria is just Iran and their beachhead in the Levant. But that's not true. And the Assad government is an entirely separate entity from the Iranian government. They're allies, of course. The Alawites are a sort of break-off group of Shiites, although actually they pre-existed Shiite Islam, but then they sort of blended with it. Anyway, it's kind of complicated, but anyway. And then they have an entire constituency of Kurds and Druze and three or four different kinds of Christians. And of course, the Shiite Arabs and Alawites, too. And So Iran, what, sends them, you know, guns and money? That doesn't mean that they've invaded Syria. That's the Iranian Empire when they're sending some guns and money to the Assad government. Same thing with Hezbollah. As Eric Margolies writes in what's the Spotlight article on antiwar.com today, he was there and watched Israel create Hezbollah by invading southern Lebanon to fight and to attack the PLA or PLO back then. And they treated all the local Lebanese Shia in southern Lebanon absolutely terribly at the same time. And so the Party of God militia rose up to oppose their occupation, their brutal invasion and occupation. And that's where they come from. They're from there. And yes, they're supported by Iran. But again, they're not an Iranian, you know, beachhead. They haven't invaded Lebanon and stationed their military there or something like in all the rhetoric. And, you know, for as friendly as they are, you know, I think probably their relationship is a lot like America and Israel's, in that the tail wags the dog a lot of the time, and Hezbollah does what they want. They're not, you know, the wholly owned subsidiary, you know, Lebanese militia of the Iranian government or anything like that. And so it's a bunch of crap. Makes for great rhetoric. Oh, Iran is expanding to dominate the Middle East. Hey. Thank George W. Bush and all the same neocons who are the ones pushing that exact talking point right now for getting rid of Saddam for them. Anyway, thanks for listening, y'all. See you later.